Here we are again, another episode of Should've Listened to My Mother. I'm Jackie Tantillo, your host. This episode, I think, is going to be very interesting because there's so much packed into one life of my next guest, Anne O'Keefe, that I think there's something to learn for everybody. So I want to welcome you, Anne, to this week's episode.
Thank you.
Anne O'Keefe and I grew up together, became friends in junior high. On a recent episode, we spoke with Mary Ellen Cole. So these lives, Mary Ellen and Anne's lives, are very much interwoven. And Anne's going to tell us a little bit about her life. And we're also going to talk about her mom, because it's all one, really. I think it's going to be very exciting. There's a lot to say. Anne, you're one of five kids?
One of five, yes.
Where are you in the order? You're near the top, right?
I am the second of five in 4 years and 10 months.
Yeah. Gosh, our town was amazing. So many kids.
If that's possible.
Apparently it is possible because we've all lived through it.
Exactly.
So what kind of a role, you know, we all have roles in the pecking order. What kind of a role do you have? Three sisters and a brother.
I do.
So what was your place in the family? I'm just curious.
Well, I was the second child, 12 months behind my sister Mary, who is a typical first child, very organized, detail-oriented, and then I was more of a loose cannon, more creative, which didn't really fit into the role of my family. My family was extremely academic, so it was a little bit of trying to find my way, but I think I did. And I'm very close to my siblings. I was always known as Nurse Anne, the one who solved the problems and took care of people. So that's pretty much where I fit in.
You certainly have played that part. You have filled that role throughout your life, because we're just about to jump into the next section of your life, the next part of your life as a senior in high school. And you were in love. You had your high school sweetheart.
Yes. I had met my husband, Andy, when I was in high school. He was in college. I actually met him at the junior prom. He had taken his best friend's sister as a favor because she didn't have a date, and that's when we ended up meeting. So it was actually my junior prom, and he had just finished his sophomore year in college, and that's where we met. And he went home and said to his sister, "I met this girl. I don't know if I should ask her out." And he did. He called me about a week later, and we went to see Grease. The movie had just come out, and then we dated that summer and throughout my senior year, and then in May, I had gotten pregnant, graduated from high school in June, and shortly after graduation, I had found out that I was pregnant. So we planned a very fast wedding. And ended up getting married the end of September. And we got married on a Saturday. And then we flew down to Roanoke, Virginia, which is where Andy was going to school. He was starting his senior year. So we moved down and lived down there. Interesting. We had about $5,000 from the wedding. And we lived off of that, no car. And we did all of our wash at the, where the athletic team did their wash.
You snuck in to do your laundry?
Yeah, that's where we did all the laundry, was with the team wash. And it was interesting, washing baby clothes in that spot, but we did.
And, oh my gosh.
Andy used to bring home, you know, the big vats of milk that they had in the cafeteria. and he would bring us home, and we had about $30 a month that we could spend on calling home every Sunday, and $20 a week on food. And we stuck to that budget. We did, because we didn't have a choice. We borrowed a car from a friend when I was in labor, and that's how I got to the hospital to have our daughter.
So that's just the beginning of the story.
That was the beginning. That was the beginning. And, you know, a lot of struggles, but we both say we never would have had it any other way, because we really learned how to work together. So that was the good part. And then, yeah, then we went on to, moved up to New Jersey. Well, we actually moved to New York first, to Long Island, and lived there for a couple of years, and then moved to New Jersey, which is where we live now, and had our second daughter. But it took a long time. Our first two were 5.5 years apart. And then we thought it would take that long the third time, so didn't realize that we got pregnant when our second daughter was 9 months old. And, yeah, then we had 5 and 7 years, and then we were done. I had 6 kids at 32, and I thought, well, this is great. We wanted 6, and about 4 years later, we welcomed number 7.
Voila!
I can't imagine life without him. Voila, yeah.
Voila. Easy as that. 7 kids. But, oh my gosh, this is such a fairy tale story, and we have to step back a little bit, because you made it sound so easy and seamless, your senior year of high school and when all this happened, but it was quite the opposite, and there's a lot that went on. Do you care to talk about that?
I mean, it was hard because, number one, I was going to college. I had, you know, hooked up over the phone with my college roommate, and we figured out who was bringing what to school. And so that was, you know, I had to tell my parents that I was pregnant, which you didn't do. In our town, in the family, grew up in a very strict Irish Catholic family. And, you know, my dad had really gave me a choice. He said, you can either, you know, I will take care of, we will raise the baby and pay for everything and pay for, you know, her to go to school and college, and but you can never see him again, or, you know, you've got to move out. And the day he said that was actually Andy's 21st birthday, August 9th, and I already had moved out. My mom was, I told my mom ahead of telling my dad, and she knew that it was going to take a while for her to tell him. It took her a few weeks, and she took him out to lunch in Greenport, and she said, okay, you know, I'm going to go ahead and tell your father, but I think you better be scarce, which I knew what that meant, because he was pretty heavy-handed. And so I actually had already packed my stuff and was living across town at Andy's parents' house. So that was, you know, that was hard. And then I had, and my father was writing letters to the church to try to, even though I was 18 and Andy was 21, which technically state law in New York, you know, you had to be 18 and 21, respectively. And we were, so whereas we thought we'd get married in July, it wasn't until September 29th that we were able to really get married, because whatever it was that he was writing to the church, then we had to go through the pre-cana. That was somewhat difficult. My mom did attend the wedding. My father did not. My brother, who was 16 at the time, walked me down the aisle, and we had the reception at my in-laws' house, right out on the their they had a side lot next to their house. So we had the reception there, and it was, you know, kegs of beer donated by the local, the guy who owned the Chop House, which was the local bar. And he actually drove us in his light blue Continental. That was the wedding car. And sandwiches from the deli. And that was pretty much the wedding.
And how many years ago? What is this, 79?
We just celebrated 39. Yeah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I lucked out. You know, I married a extremely patient, mature, very family, dedicated, devoted, very Catholic man. And, you know, he stepped up to the plate and did the right thing from day one. His mother wasn't sure how this should go, and for a while there, you know, there was a little bit of talk about what we should do. Andy should go out to California to live with his uncle, but he was firm that he really wanted to get married, and so that's what we ended up doing. But it was an interesting few months. I moved in actually with Mary Ellen Cole's mom for the last month, and that was I wouldn't say a difficult time. It was a whole new world to me because all of my friends were going off to college, and I had to plan a wedding with Andy's mom, but not living at his parents' house. But I lived with Mrs. B, as we called her, and the woman, as we all know, was a saint. And so she gave me shelter, and we kind of did the wedding in about 3 weeks. So,
how exactly did you break the news to your mom? You must be able to see sense and feel yourself in that place every day.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. She was sitting at the kitchen table, and I was sitting on a little stool next to a counter across the kitchen, which was always 10 feet from her. And I had attempted a few times, but found it very hard. And being one of five, you know, people were at home. My sister Mary was off in college, but the other three were home, not physically in the house, but, and she was having a cup of coffee, and I turned my head. I was looking at the refrigerator because I couldn't look her in the eye, and I said to her, don't send that check off to Rosemont. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I'm not going to college. And she said, what do you mean? And I said, I'm pregnant. And I remember she stood up holding, it was a teacup with a saucer, and I remember she stood up, and she was shaking, and she just kept saying, oh, my God, oh, my God. And she said, I'm not going to tell you, I can't tell your father right now. Let me think about this. So it was kind of bizarre to live in the house with her while during the waiting period for her to tell my dad. So this was probably July. We had told Andy's parents a couple weeks before. And, they took the news like troopers. She didn't tell my dad probably toward the end of July was when she told him. And I heard a knock on the door, and I looked outside. I didn't see a car, so I figured, oh, can't be my dad. And, he was standing there at the door. And he said, I could see milk, open the door. And I did, and backed away right away, and he came in, and that's when he, had said, "How could you do this?" As though it was planned. And that's when he gave me the ultimatum. You can move home and take care of all the finances with the baby and help you raise the baby, but, you can't see him again. I wasn't going to do that, so...
Did you ever reconcile this relationship between you and your dad?
With my dad? Well, this is part of where my husband's so heroic. It took about, I would say, close to 5 years where on, the holidays, Christmas, I would, on Christmas morning, I would go up to my parents' house, and Andy would sit out in the car while I brought Katie in to see them. Mm-hmm. Things got reconciled when Andy started making money. And that's pretty much when he started accepting him. When outside, he would come into the house and see a new rug in the house, and he would turn to Andy and say to him, "Don't you know how to tell her no?" And I thought, oh, but that was my dad. He was just a very difficult, conflicted, unhappy person. So, we reconciled. It was never great. It was always somewhat strained. And I remember he ended up dying of lung cancer. I made it to the house about 5 minutes before he died. And we all took care of him. He was able to stay home. We all took turns because we brought a hospital bed into the little den. And we would all take turns staying over, and I would sleep on the couch.
Right. So you were there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there. I have no problem with my role in it. He just was a very unhappy alcoholic. I feel sorry for him. I do. He ended up dying. Kyle was about 4 months old, so that was almost about 29 years ago. Yeah.
Wow, that's a long time ago. I didn't realize it's been
that
long.
Yeah, Kyle was 4 months old when he died.
It's a terrible disease. It just...
It is. It is. My mom took the brunt of it, so... And she got to live, So she passed away a year ago, and she had 28 years without my dad, which was great. She really got to live life to its fullest. She would comment, she couldn't believe that on his deathbed, knowing he was dying, he never apologized to her. Mm. It was more of a, I guess she got a little bit introspective as the years went on, and she would talk about, there was a time he fell off a ladder and was in the hospital for a couple of days. I was a baby, so it was just my sister Mary and myself at the time. And she was saying, that was the time that she knew she could have left him, and it was her window, and she didn't. And then her dad died. I was 5 years old, and her other comment was she knew the day that he died that she didn't have a chance to ever leave him. He was an attorney, and he always said to her, if she ever tried to divorce him, that her kids would never see the inside of the college. And my mom had 2 master's degrees, and education was everything for her.
Yeah, education was very important.
So smart. And so, yes. And so the thought that if she divorced him or left him, that her kids would never be able to go to college was enough for her to feel like she had to sacrifice herself for the rest of her life.
What a bully.
Oh, he was a bully, all right.
To say the least. I know he's your dad, but I'm really sorry.
And I'm married the opposite, I married the opposite and of my dad, and I'm very thankful for that. But my mom was an amazing woman. She really was.
She has two masters, right? Is that what you just said?
Yes.
What did she study? English?
Education.
Education.
And
education and history.
Yeah. It's not that growing up, there were times that the kids would be doing the homework and they'd say, let's call Grammy. She knew the answer to everything, especially history and geography. She knew. She was the most well-read person. Andy always said she was the smartest person in the world. We always used to say that we should have put her on Jeopardy. Because, with the exception of pop culture, she could answer any question.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, she really was brilliant. As a matter of fact, when I had gotten married and left, when I moved down to Roanoke, she said she cried for 6 straight months, and my father said to her, you know what, you got to figure something else out. She's not coming back. So she started taking classes at CW Post, and she took classes at CW Post from that time on, adult classes, mostly in art and history, and for 25 years.
That's pretty amazing. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, every semester except for the summer, yeah.
But she went to College of New Rochelle and her master's from Marquette and Fordham, right? I mean, this is dedication plus having the family and everything else. What was your mom's childhood like?
My mom grew up she moved all over. She actually lived in Westfield for a while. Because she talked about going to Morristown, and she loved to go to Morristown. Oh, I remember when my daddy used to bring me here. When she went to the College of New Rochelle, she went there because she lived in Larchmont. And her brother was allowed to go away to college, but she wasn't, which I think was the old school way of thinking with the education. But she grew up in Larchmont for the most part. She had cousins and relatives in Scranton and Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. So she used to spend a lot of time there. It wasn't that they had a lot of money, but they were rich in a lot of other ways. You know, her father was very indulgent with her, and he used to take her and on the train all the time, and they would go visit places. Now, interestingly enough, one of her greatest fears as she was getting older, her mom ended up, I'm trying to think of what the term for it is, she became fearful of leaving there, and they never lived in a house. They always lived in an apartment, but she had a fear of leaving home. Like her physical house.
Agoraphobia?
I'm trying. Yes, that's it.
She wouldn't go out.
Mom,
oh my gosh.
Yes. So my mother made it a point as she got older of going out every single day, no matter where it was, whether it was to the grocery store to get her nails done, to get her hair done, to go to the library. She loved the library. To go to Lord & Taylor to buy an outfit. She felt like she had to leave the house every day, so she wouldn't end up becoming like that, which I thought was interesting.
How many siblings does your mom have?
My mom has a brother who lives in Wilbraham, Massachusetts.
Wow.
He's still alive.
When you would spend time with your mom, did you have a regular routine, or did you cook together, or did you like to do anything together, or were you out of there?
Well, my mother, God rest her soul, and I know I'm going to get a sign from her later on today because she's not going to be happy I mentioned it. We used to call her the frozen food queen. my mother was an academic. She was not a cook. But she tried. I mean, you know, she would make London broil with mashed potatoes. She would, you know, make spaghetti and meatballs with ragu, you know, that type of stuff. So she would just love to talk about travel. She had always hoped that she and I could take a trip somewhere. She loved to travel. She would travel with my sister Mary because her kids were grown up. And my sister Patty, she took a couple of trips with. She took my daughter Katie to Italy when Katie graduated from, I'm trying to think if it's when Katie graduated from, I guess, from Georgetown.
Katie, your first child.
Yes. So it was either when she graduated from college or when Katie got her master's.
So that's great. That's really fun.
Yeah. But she loved to talk. We never made the trip because before my kids had left the house, I had grandkids. So we never got to take that trip. But she would love to go to the museum. The last time I was with her, I had taken her in. All of her doctors were in New York City. And I had taken her to one of her doctor appointments, and then we met my sister, Mary, and we went to the Met because it was the Monet exhibit. She wanted to see that. So she loved museums. Yeah, but I would, you know, when I would get out there to Garden City, we would go out to lunch. We would sit in her apartment, which was, that was a big deal when we moved her out of her house. She really didn't. She lived in this gorgeous apartment and that she owned, and, you know, she didn't like it. She didn't like the marble floors, and she liked her little hardwood floors, but it was a great place for her to live. And it was 24-hour, you know, concierge, so she wanted for nothing. But
you knew that she could be taken care of. She'd be watched over, and there was plenty of people around, and that's also really important socially to have activity around you, so you're not just alone, right? That's really important.
But it was her family. Family was everything to her.
Yeah. Please tell our listeners your mom's name, because we've been referring to her as she.
My mom's name is Mary Elizabeth Finnegan Givens.
Was she ever called Mary Elizabeth? Like, Mary Elizabeth, get in here. When she was younger, Dina?
Oh, really? Oh, yes. Yes, all the time. And my sister's named after her. Growing up, my mother's nickname was Finny. Our oldest grandson, well, our oldest grandchild, his middle name is Finnegan. Our daughter Katie named him after my mom. So,
was she a presence at all the holidays?
Everything. Every holiday, every baptism, every communion, every confirmation, every wedding, every, you know, preschool graduation, eighth grade graduation, high school graduation.
And there were a lot.
Yeah, it was everything to her. Everything. Yeah, so poor Erin, our daughter, was having a really hard time because my mom, it was the first graduation that my mom wasn't going to be at. So my daughter actually took my mom's graduation robe and wore it at her graduation. And my mom would have loved it because she graduated summa cum laude, and my mother was just so proud of her. But I thought that was kind of neat that she wore my mom's graduation robe.
Oh my gosh, that's the coolest thing ever. How do you even have it still? Your mom saved it.
Yeah. Here's the funniest part about it. So my daughter is now in her master's program, but she had just graduated with her degree in education. And the girl sitting next to her at graduation, and it was in the church at University of San Francisco, which my mother would have died to have a graduation in this church. It was just spectacular. But the girl next to Erin turned to her at one point and said, "Why do you have a master's robe on?" So Erin said she she's also going to wear it as at her master's graduation.
I bet she is, and Mary is going to be smiling. Oh my gosh! What a twist of fate!
And my kids get signs from my mother all the time, and we have a family text that there are now 15 of us on because unfortunately the son-in-laws are on there too, so they have to be they have to put up with a lot of this. But and there's banter every day back and forth between all seven kids and the what we call the outlaws, the son-in-laws they call the outlaws. But the kids will always post pictures of the signs that my mother sends them. So it's very neat.
Like what kind of signs
really
are they? Because
cool.
I know you've mentioned that she comes to you often still.
Yes. So, and I know a lot of people say the cardinal, but that table that my mother was sitting at in the house that we lived in, there was a dogwood tree outside the house. And there was always a cardinal, and there was a big picture window. And there was always a cardinal that sat in that tree, and my mother would always comment about the cardinal. And shortly after my mom died, it was actually 3 weeks, a friend of mine had given me the name of a woman who said, you know, you need to call her and talk to her. She's, you know, very close to the other world. And one of the things the woman said to me was, your mom wants to make sure you notice the bird that she's sending you. And it's an uncanny amount of times that either I will drive past something and the word cardinal will be on, you know, the side of a truck, or there will be a physical cardinal outside my window. Or, and I mean, to the point that I had never noticed it. I walked past the, you know, the Hallmark store, and there's the cardinal in the window on a, you know, on a pillow. Anyhow, it's incredible how many times my kids get sent these signs of the cardinal. So
that's so great. I believe it. I totally believe that.
And the number 111 comes up to me constantly, and my mom lived, her two addresses were 111 Stratford Avenue and 111 Cherry Valley Avenue. Those were the two places she lived in Garden City, and I see it almost every day. And I'm not looking for it. I mean, something's telling me to turn my head, and there's the mailbox that I'm passing that says 111. I was on the Merritt Parkway the other day, and Andy and I are driving and talking, you know, something random about my mother, and not 10 minutes later, there's the exit on the Merritt Parkway, you know, 111, I mean, as clear as day. So I get a lot of that.
That's pretty great. That's pretty great. What are your kids, what do they call your mom? Do they have a nickname for her?
Grammy.
That's pretty Grammy. Great. Well, Grammy still has a presence in your kid's life, which is really cool, and your life. And I think she always will.
Well, and she called them all the time. I mean, she spoke to them all the time. She was so cute. Even we found a pad when we were cleaning out her apartment, and she had everybody's name, including the son-in-laws and my children's son-in-laws, and all of their phone numbers, so she could text them for Valentine's Day. Like she had written Valentine's Day, and then she put it. She would also send you a card, but she had the list of everybody's name and their cell phone number, so she could text them, and my niece would help her text each one, Happy Valentine's Day, love, Grammy.
She didn't do an outlaw text?
Oh, yeah. Even the outlaws.
All group text.
They loved her. Oh, they loved her. She just, you know, she would just love to sit and just talk.
How much did she change once your dad passed? Was this passion and love of hers visible at all when your dad was alive?
No. She was more, this was my mother. She wore knee socks, with loafers, wool skirts, and those sterile sweaters. Mm-hmm. And the day my dad died, she started wearing pants and turtlenecks. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it was almost like a physical transformation, too.
Did she burn all of her clothes?
Oh, no.
Anne, that's amazing, you know, the pressure that she must have been under.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Boy, women are remarkable. They put up with a lot of stuff.
Especially
that generation. Especially that generation. But it's not easy to leave when you're in a tough relationship.
But I just, and she would say from time to time, I think some of you wouldn't have the issues that you have if I had left your father. Mm. And I would always say to her, Mom, that's not true. And none of us are that bad that you have to worry about our issues.
Right.
She just, she carried the weight of the world on her shoulders.
Well, she was protecting you guys. She was taking the brunt of everything.
She was unbelievable. She was unbelievable. She was a fierce protector.
Yeah, what a mom.
Fierce, She was great, and as Andy even put it, even if you weren't into the academics, she took each person and what they liked. Like, I have one sister, and she loves pop culture. She loves the Housewife shows. She loves People magazine. And my mother would never make you feel like you were a lesser person if you weren't an academic or well-read or didn't know where a certain country was on the map. She would gear the entire conversation to what your interest was, which to me was pretty amazing.
That is so great.
Well, and I think she, she saw what my dad did to some of the kids, and That was critical to her. That was so important, I mean, he was the type of guy that for instance, my sister is extremely smart, and the one that's married, 12 months older than I am, 12 months and 4 days, and we would go at report card time, and he would come and sign your report card, and he would give her $5 for every A, and she had all A's. And then it would get to me, and he would look at my report card, and he would say, go have your mother sign your report card. And which, I can't really say that affected me, because I had my mom, who would then tell me, what a beautiful job I did in the art class, or playing the recorder, or whatever it was that I was into. Mm-hmm. So she really made you feel like you were the most important person in the world. Mm-hmm. She really got her calling. She really, really did.
Boy, I have a lot to learn from Mary Elizabeth Finnegan Gibbons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I
know, some days I look up and I'll say to her, okay, I'll try better tomorrow. because she's a hard act, tough act to follow. But I know she's always there, and she would always say to me, oh, Anne, you have so much going on with the kids with their practices. You just call that coach today and tell them, Kyle's not going to be at practice today. We're having family time. And I would be like, oh, Mom, it's varsity lacrosse. You can't do that. And she's like, well, you just tell him.
Did all 7 kids play lacrosse?
They all played or are playing in college except for Erin.
Did she do a sport? Soccer? Or?
She played. Well, Erin played lacrosse and field hockey in high school, but she definitely did not want to be doing it in college. She would come downstairs like the day of tryouts, and she'd say, I'm not going to try out. She said, I'm not fast like my sisters. I don't like to run, and, you know, I don't want to play lacrosse. I don't like lacrosse. So, yeah, she ended up playing, and even her senior year, which I thought was kind of admirable but crazy, her senior year of high school, winter sport, she decided to take up swimming, which meant that she had to be dropped off. Andy had to drop her off on his way to work at 6 o'clock in the morning to do the team practices, which I thought, as a senior, who's going to get up and go in water and then have to come out in the cold? But she did it. She couldn't dive. She would belly flop every time. And we always knew when Erin was, you know, if we were walking in a little bit late to one of the swim meets, we would know that Erin had just dove into the water, because we would hear other parents go, oh, because she couldn't dive. She literally couldn't dive. She would belly flop.
Wait, this was her senior year of high school? She couldn't dive, or this was when she was little? She still couldn't dive properly?
No, she never. She took swim lessons growing up, but she was never on the swim team.
Right.
So why she thought of doing it her senior year, I have no idea.
Good for her.
But, yeah.
Can you, just so our listeners have a brief idea of how you planned the day with the seven kids, because I remember you telling me about your charts and your color coding of things.
Yes. I don't know how back then I didn't require sleep, because sleep is the most important thing next to my family in my life these days. But I used to, so at night, I'd get the kids into bed, finally, and there was 18 years between the youngest and the oldest, so there was a lot of changing gears. At 11 o'clock at night, between 11 and 1 a.m., I would do the wash. They wore uniforms to school, but they were in three different schools, three different towns, two different counties, and none of them got bused either. And so I would do the sports wash for their uniforms for that. And I would do the school uniforms. I would make the lunches, fill out the forms, go through their books, whatever homework that they had, to check their homework. Sometimes I was finishing up a report. and then I had a calendar that was about 3 feet by 4 feet. And each child had their own color. So there were seven different marker colors on this calendar. And I would write each one's schedule on the days, in the different little squares, big squares, and what activity each child had, because they all had different practices and different times. And, you know, the girls, they would practice for their travel team up in Sloatsburg, New York. So, and one would practice from, say, 5 to 7, because it was under the lights, and Colleen would have 5 to 7 practice, and Bridget would practice from 7 to 9. So I had to plan, you know, bringing food, because I was either nursing somebody or the rest of the kids. I would have to find them a ride or bring them in the car with me. So a lot of times, like, packed, like, dinner stuff. I would put soup in thermoses and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's what went on the calendar, all of that stuff. I would put whatever permission slips had to be filled out, put them in the backpack, and, you know, there was forms, and then there were committees that I was involved in the school. So I would do any kind of that work at night, and then I would go to bed at 1, and then I'd get up at 5 o'clock.
Start all over again.
Yeah, I wouldn't shower. I mean, I wouldn't work out, but I'd take a shower, and, you know, then you have to start getting them up, because nobody got bused, so we had to leave the house, you know, usually around 7 o'clock in the morning. So, yeah.
Holy smokes. So that was busy.
Yeah, but I loved it. I loved every minute.
Can I just say this just for the record? You talk about your mom and your sister Mary. They're all very brilliant and very much academics, but you're like one of the smartest people that I know. So just for the record, you've always been very business savvy.
Wait, it's funny how, and everybody's got different learning styles, and I've got tons of kids with different learning styles. And you don't realize the way to learn, because when we were growing up, it was just one way. You went into class, they expected you to figure it out, and, you know, some of my kids are auditory learners, you know, some are visual, and I've learned over the years, because I love to read, I love to learn about places, you know, it's all how it's taught to you.
That's exactly right.
And that's why, so Katie's a teacher, she's a 10th grade Spanish teacher, our oldest. And then Erin is, she's going to be a teacher too. And I just, Andy and I have always thought, because of my mom, how important it is. And I love how Katie likes to take that one kid every year who is the worst student and go over and above and go out and buy, you know, certain things so that she can teach them the way that they need to learn how to, especially language in Spanish is, you know, it's not everybody gets it, but she really makes it her focus to be able to teach that child in a different way, the way that they're going to learn. And that was my mom.
Katie's teaching Spanish,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she teaches at an all boys school, 10th grade Spanish, 10th and 11th.
So she's very much like your mom. How cool is that?
Very much. And she just, you know, she was greatly affected when my mom, after she had the stroke, and, you know, we knew she was going to pass away, and there we had 4 days in the hospital with her, and the weather was horrible. And Katie lives in Pennsylvania, outside Philly, and I'm coming. I have to see Grammy. I have to see Grammy. And I said, Katie, listen, you got your hands full. She had just had, she had a one-year-old. She had the two older kids, and well, of course, she drove out, and she whispered in my mom's ear for about 5 minutes. All the other kids, you know, they called, and we would put the phone up to her ear, even though my mom was on morphine, and, excuse me, never woke up after we had started the morphine. But, you know, Katie whispered in her ear for about a good five minutes, and about 20 minutes later, my mom passed away. And, you know, like you say, people wait, you know, how people wait for people to come. And my sister Patty, who was extremely close to my mom, said, you know, I really think she waited for Katie because she and Katie were so close. I mean, Katie was the first grandchild. My mother was 45 when Katie was born.
Wow. Your mom was 45 when we were seniors in high school?
Mm. Yeah. But, you know, it was so different back then. You know, it was kind of, you know, 50 was old back then, or we thought, so we thought.
Yeah.
now it's not so old.
We're just getting started.
Exactly.
Anne O'Keefe, so many amazing lessons, and your mom is going to keep teaching people, especially more and more people get to hear stories like this. Your mom and my mom and moms out there in the world.
I've always said to my kids, you know, your grandmother was such a force, and she loved so fiercely. That just doesn't go away. It's like that kind of energy and spirit. When, you know, when she died, I said, if you think that that's gone, you know, you have another thing coming. There is no way something like that can leave this earth. You know, yeah, it's all good.
It's all good. You've been listening to Should Have Listened to My Mother, my guest, Anne O'Keefe. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.